Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Brian Reeves joining us. Brian and I go way back to the beginning of my journey into writing, podcasting, coaching. He was the very first person, I think, if definitely in the first one to three, who said yes when I outreached to start getting myself out there and get the messages that I believed in out in the world. And we did an interview together. So it's so fun for me to have him on The Art of Authenticity and share his thoughts. He's a really awesome, interesting guy. He's a regular blog contributor to The Good Man Project, The Elephant Journal, Raw Attraction Magazine, Sexy, Conscious Awake. He's written two books. And the second one, Tell the Truth, Let the Peace Fall Where It May, and that's P-E-A-C-E, not pieces. Brian is the guy on authenticity. He and I went into a really interesting conversation all about this idea is, if I tell you the truth, if I really open up about who I am, what I'm really thinking, all of the mess inside, will you really love me? Brian dives deep into this question of why we learn from a young age to start lying about who we are to get our needs met by our families and continue to put this face forward into the world, and how that affects relationships, your own sense of self in this journey of trying to find happiness. Brian wrote a whole book on this subject. He has one amazing thought after the next. I know you're going to love the show. So tune in, get a pen and paper if you're in a relationship and you're having a lot of struggles, because he lays out a lot of what I think are real interesting insights into the world of authentic relationships. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you like today's show. Welcome to today's episode. Today we have Brian Reeves joining us. Hey, how are you today?
Hi, Laura. Nice to see you. Well, just in my mind, because we're not actually seeing each other.
Nice to hear you.
But we did a video interview before, so I see you in my mind.
There we go. Yeah. So we did do a video interview, and I want to just do a little public thank you, because we were talking before the show that when I was starting off, and it's always so hard when you're doing something new and getting somebody to give you that yes at the beginning, and you were that guy who said yes very early on in my efforts towards writing a book and getting my life in this direction. So thank you very much.
Oh, it's an honor. I appreciate that. And I think that's when you reached out, I think when we connected, you know, I'm very deeply intuitive. Just, I feel that yes, I offer it, say it. It's like that. I think we'll probably dive into that in this conversation we're about to have.
That's right.
How you frame that, just saying yes. That's, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Well, I so appreciated that yes, I can't tell you. So Brian, you have been very busy with your blog, and you recently had a book, Tell the Truth, Let the Peace Fall Where It May, How Authentic Living Creates Passion, Fulfillment, and Love You Seek. I mean, who doesn't want all that, right?
Who doesn't want all that? That's right.
So I was going through your book, and I just literally, I couldn't stop pulling out sections and thinking, oh my God, I want to talk about this one and this one and this one. So I'm going to try my best to narrow it down. But before we jump in to the book, I think it would be really awesome. I love your story. I know your story about, you know, starting off in the military, changing careers. Could you give us a little background of how you got to this space?
Sure. Yes. Well, you know, it's funny. I've been reflecting on this a lot as I'm in a new relationship, a new intimate relationship, and this book coming out, and, you know, just the world of kind of exposing what seems like most of humanity still doesn't really feel comfortable exposing about the human experience. And so I've been really reflecting on, like, why is it so important to me? Why did I write a book about telling the truth and let the peace fall where it may? P-E-A-C-E for people who, everyone always asks me, is it P-E-A-C-E? Yes, it is. So why did I do that? And I realized, you know, in reflecting on this, I realized why it's like I've almost like made my name as a man articulating the inner world of being a man, of what that experience is like in relationship to everything, to money, to love, to sex, to other men, right? Why has that been so important to me to like just be full frontal with the world and how I write and present myself? And I realized, because I grew up and I spent, you know, probably the first 25 years of my life in both my family environment, where I had I was surrounded by really good people, but for example, my stepfather was an alcoholic and a rageaholic, and it was terrifying in my home, and we never talked about that. Mm-hmm. We never talked about this giant thing happening in my life growing up. There was just no commentary on this thing going on in my home, and that terrorized me. And then I went into the military for 10 years. I went to university, got a degree at an aviation school, and then I went into the Air Force for 5 years active duty. And there again, like, I could just look and see. I've always been a very questioning person, like looking deeper into beneath the obvious, what's present, the obvious appearances, and going, huh, what's that all about? And here I am now in the military, and there's so much blatant inconsistency, incongruence between what's happening and kind of the bigger questions, like what we're supposed to be doing, and the bigger, and to me, what kind of what my heart is telling me is really true, or there's something else going on, and we're not talking about that. And then, you know, and then I did relationships with women. and from that place of, let's not talk about these big obvious things in the room, and let's just try to do relationship without really talking about the stuff we should be talking about that's in the way. Let's just pretend it's not in the way. And it was just a mess. I mean, I just created mess after mess, and I'm a good person. I have a good heart, always good intentions. And yet I was experiencing just mess after mess. And it's like, okay, what the hell? I mean, let's just have it out already. Let's just say what the hell is really happening here. Let's talk about what's actually present. Can we do that? Like, and I just started writing from that place and just, you know, telling the truth about my experience. And I mean, when all you know is kind of, you know, mess after mess, at some point it's like, well, you know, ignoring the obvious hasn't worked out really well.
Yeah.
So let's just have it out and see what happens.
I love that. And that actually segues perfectly into your book, because you start off with this incredible, I'm just going to quote you, "If I tell you the truth, you won't love me." Right. And it's so, do you feel as if the story of your life, and so many of us, right, there's this flagrant stuff happening around us, and it's so uncomfortable, and we don't want to talk to it.
Yeah.
And on some deep level, I think what you're saying is true for me. I think it's true for many people listening. It's like, if I really speak the truth about the mess of my inner life, I have so much shame around that I won't be accepted.
You know, that, so I wrote 10 drafts of that book over the 3 years that I wrote it. It changed 10 times. That first sentence never changed.
Wow.
It was there from the very first time. That book started out as a blog. And I was working with a coach at the time who was helping me really get in touch with what does it mean to tell the truth, to just come clean. And I was writing this blog. Usually a blog is about a page and a half. And I was writing kind of a blog about this, and the title of the blog was "Tell the Truth, Let the Peace Fall Where It May." And I couldn't stop writing. That was the first sentence. If I tell you who I really am, you won't love me. Right? That sentence never changed. And because that is so at the core of what, and as a coach and working with people and getting to do, you know, really deep, intimate work with people and the fears they're carrying and the way that they're, you know, shaping their life around those fears. It's that sense of worthiness, like who I really am is wrong somehow. It's flawed. It's like the original sin of our kind of, you know, modern religion. There's something innately wrong about me, about the things that I'm experiencing. And if I tell you, if I really show you, if I show you what this bedlam of chaos, this going on inside of me, oh my God, you're not going to stick around for that. I wouldn't even stick around for that.
Yep. And I don't even want to know it myself. I have this joke I say to a lot of my coaching clients, like, hey, what if I told you in the middle of the night last night, I inserted a chip in your head and it's been recording your thoughts all day and you didn't know about it. And I'm going to take that chip and I'm going to play it on a loudspeaker for everybody you know and love. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh my God, like everybody just shudders, right? Because we feel that this inner life is so wrong, and that if people hear our truths, we're like you said, not, I I mean, you just said it so beautifully, but we won't be accepted. We won't be loved. And even we won't look at it ourselves because we will turn on ourselves too. Do you think that's...
Well, I think that's, you know, all we're really, all any of us are really ever doing is when we refuse to acknowledge that stuff ourselves, all we're doing is then projecting it out on each other. That's all we're doing. We're flinging our internal caca at the people around us so that we don't have to look at it and saying, look, you have caca all over you. And we don't realize, well, I'm the one that just flung it on you. That caca came from me. Right.
And I mean, so why don't we, right? You say we're all playing the game. Right. And whether it be worldly success, wisdom, fulfillment, or simply knowing that we have as equal a right to exist or and be seen as anyone else, but we're playing a game of what we think we want from the outside world. What do you mean by that?
Well, here's what I've realized, especially through the filter of the context of doing the couples coaching that I do. Here's what I realized through the context of codependency. You know, when we're born, we're these tiny, cute little creatures that coo and, you know, wiggle our arms and we cannot take care of ourselves whatsoever. We will die if an elder, if some adult or some caretaker doesn't love us. We literally will die. And so we spend the first, you know, years of our lives learning how to conform ourselves to get the attention of those caretakers in our midst so that they'll literally not leave us for dead on the side of a road somewhere. You know, that we do all the things that we can to, even in fact, in my book, as I was researching this, I learned that we start lying at the age of 6 months. 6 months old, we start pretending to cry or you know, fake laughing just to get the attention of the adults around us.
Is that right?
As a way of saying, you know, hey, I'm here. I need to be fed or I need to be cleaned or whatever the case may be. I need something from you. So we start learning to manipulate the world around us so that we don't die, literally. Very, very, very quickly in these bodies. And of course, then, you know, as we age, our parents are very conditional. They're human. They're conditional loving like most of us are. And even in their unconditional love, there's still a lot of conditions going on there. And so,
right.
So we're still shaping ourselves like, oh, I did that. And daddy turned his back on me. You know, I remember seeing, I was with a friend years ago. I remember seeing this. They had a 4-year-old boy or something. And I was in their living room. And this 4-year-old boy, he knocked a glass of milk out of his mom's hand and it spilled on the carpet. And the father put his arms, like crossed his arms and turned his back on his 4-year-old child. Is such a, and like a, I'm going to deny you love for what you just did. And I saw this little 4-year-old boy crying and like begging, like, daddy, pay attention to me. And it was so subtle and yet so harsh. And I just, you know, that's what we grow up in. We grow up in a world that says, if you even accidentally knock the cup, you're 4 damn years old. I mean, you knock stuff, you're right. I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
And then so we grow up in that. And then, but here's where it goes off the rails is then we become adults and we go into adult relationships, whether it's friendships, and we do this as teenagers. I mean, it's pervasive throughout our life. But then it's like our nervous system is tuned to the idea that if you don't love me, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Like if you leave me, I may as well be dead. I mean, all of us have experienced that, especially, you know, I think as we age, we kind of grow out of that more readily. Although I still had about a year ago, I had a woman who wrote to me from the hospital. Her husband of 30 years had left her and she slit her wrists because he left her. I mean, if that's not the definition of, that's not a perfect example of, if you leave me, I will die.
Yes. Yes.
That's what we're all carrying. And so naturally we're going to play the game. We're going to play whatever, you know, we're going to hide information or we're going to suppress authentic feelings and emotions that come up because if we're afraid our partner can't handle it, or which is a big one, especially in the couples work that I do, authentic feeling and emotion, right? Anyway, that's a whole nother rabbit hole you and I could run down, but
yeah, I know, and I want to, but go ahead.
So, well, that's, I mean, we're all, even in our Western culture ideal of full independence and equality for all. And, you know, it's the rise of the independent woman, you know, who, I mean, we're about to have a female president, hopefully, because the alternative would be fascinating to me, but not desirable. But anyway, so, you know, it's the rise of that kind of, you know, I am my own person. I don't need another person, for men and women. I can stand on my own. And that's kind of, you know, that's like the ultimate stake in the ground that says, I don't need you. And I don't want you to need me either.
And so if I agree with you that we are so conditioned, and I have a 10-year-old, and I saw this everywhere that people played these, you know, masterful games. I tried not to play them with my son, but I'm sure in some way I couldn't help it. To get what you want, you figure out how to play this child in ways that you don't mean to. And, you know, and my goal is to not have my son in a position where love is used as a chit mm-hmm. in getting his needs met. But, you know, it dawned on me, I'm like, he can't get a glass of water unless I give him permission. Like, it is crazy how dependent he is on me.
Yep.
And so I feel a lot of compassion towards him. And I tried to live as a parent from that place. But so many of us are conditioned in these withholding affection, leveraging the thing that we care most about against us, right? I will take that toy or that privilege or that thing if you don't do as I say. That dependency and that need and that sense that I will die, and we all have had that breakup or that feeling. What can you do if you're in that place? Maybe you're in a bad relationship. Maybe you're in a great relationship, but you feel that deep sense within you. How can somebody start the process of feeling okay in their own life without that sense of dependency?
So most of the work that I do as a couples coach is helping couples come out of codependency and step into independence. And they may stay together, they may break apart in that process. You know, as a couples coach, I don't guarantee you stay together. That's not what I do.
Yeah.
I help your evolution as an individual, and maybe your relationship has taught you all that it's there to teach. And what a lot of people are struggling when they finally come to coaching, especially, and usually people come to coaching after therapy, I find too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, all that stuff didn't work. What else is out there? Oh, what's this coaching thing? So what usually I'm helping couples do, or individuals, is come out of that codependent, because we all know the feeling of, it's awful thinking that I have to hide my authentic self, or I have to manipulate, I have to, you know, get something from this person over here because I don't have it in me. And it's, God, it's all, why can't they do this? Or why doesn't he show up? Or why doesn't she be easier? You know, we're in all these crazy conversations in our head that are basically saying, you know, I need this other person to be a certain way so I can be happy. And
wait a minute, I just want to pause on that sentence, right? Because that is like, I think the bumper sticker for relationships. I need you to do this so that I can be happy, right? And when you get stuck in that loop with somebody, you've outsourced all of your happiness to another individual.
Absolutely. And you cannot live authentically, nor can your partner, when you are saddling each other with the weight of that responsibility.
Right. That's why I call it emotional weight. But yeah, so I totally am with you on that. And here's my question. Say you don't know your authentic self that well, and you are in this lying cycle, but so how do I start to find that within myself?
Yeah. So, and to kind of come back and also address that, the answer to this that I would offer is similar to the one that you just asked before that I didn't quite get to, about, well, how do I start really establishing that kind of independent experience out of codependency, what you just asked. Well, how do I really start to discover what is authentic for me? And, you know, there's kind of two parallel conversations we could have around this. There's the big conversation of, you know, what excites you in life? What are the activities? What are the things, like, what is it that, you know, is it, do you just light up when you're near the ocean? You know, what is it that, I mean, you're on this giant, big, wet rock hurtling through space at light speed and coming from God knows where, going to God knows where. You know, it's a big mystery. We're on this thing. None of us know what we're really supposed to be doing here. So, you know, in the context of that, what's life calling from you? What excites you? What dreams are you harboring, whether secretly or outwardly, that it's like life is pulling, there's a thread, you know, that life is pulling us all forward on. And that's kind of a big picture conversation. But the other conversation is just in this moment right now, what's true for you? What in this moment? You know, I read this quote once, you know, here we are in this do culture, this productivity, you got to get things done, you know, do, you got to succeed, success, achieve, get up, you know, early bird gets the worm, Nike, just do it, all that stuff. And I read this beautiful quote that said, sometimes the most urgent thing you can do is take a nap.
That's so funny, right? Totally converse to what everybody is thinking.
That really, really, really touched me deeply, because sometimes the most urgent thing, sometimes your authentic truth, what your body is aching for, is to just take a damn nap. Mm-hmm. and let that be your truth, you know. And there's, and life will tell you, and by life, your mind will tell you, no, but I have all these other responsibilities. You know, I would say to people, and this is a powerful reflection exercise. Where are you living in have to?
Yeah.
I have to go to work. I have to pay the bills. I have to, you know, go to this thing with my partner. I have to go here. I have to, you know, or I have to, you know, my favorite one is I have to feed my children. Well, actually, you don't have to feed your children. You could actually not feed them, but I bet you really want to.
That's hilarious. Right. Get rid of all the shoulds and have tos. It's horrible to live from that space. Exactly. I think you want to feed your children. And I think, you know, this question you bring up of what is your truth right now? Mm-hmm. It's really a beautiful place to start, because maybe you don't know your bigger truth. Maybe you don't know everything that makes you happy, but can you,
absolutely,
can you speak your truth now? And you talk about life being messy. And I think, to your point about a nap, sometimes we don't want to speak our truth right now because, right, this is an infinite circle. If I say right now, my truth is I'm tired and I just need to go home and I don't feel happy, we don't want to deal with the messiness and the imperfections that we might be feeling in that moment. Is that right?
Well, that's right. In my work as a couples coach, I work with a masculine feminine dynamic model. And so we live in a world that worships masculine being. Masculine being is all about control. It's all about direction, achievement, productivity. Like, the masculine in us all, men and women, is trying to order the universe, right? It's trying to order everything. Mm-hmm. It wants everything in its perfect place. Mm-hmm. Whereas the feminine in us all, the feminine of life is just moment to moment. Like, what happens? It's the mystery. It's chaos. It's the unpredictability. It's the dance. We have no idea what's going to happen next. And it's life flickering. It's the candle, you know, flickering and dancing. And it's mesmerizing, you know, staring into a fire for a masculine being is absolutely, we can get lost for hours just staring into a fire. And that's the masculine witnessing the feminine. But what we've done, what pretty much modern life is all about, is let's kill the feminine. We need to solve all the problems, eliminate chaos. Let's have no mystery. Let's have contracts and insurance for everything, so that there's no risk involved in what we're doing. There's no chance at play. Let's, you know, and it's insane. That's insane.
Right.
And
life can't be that clean and organized. It just never works.
It's not that clean and organized. And our stress comes from insisting it be that clean and organized. And we tirelessly, that's why we won't take a nap. That's why, you know, I have one of my clients, she started a woman's empowerment series in downtown LA for entrepreneurs. And it was, I went to one of her events, and, you know, 100 women were showing up, and all kind of professional, young, millennial business women. And on one of the, she had panelists there, always women. It was really, really profound, really great. One of the panelists one time there was a, she called herself the drip doctor. And what she was doing is she was selling like IV drips, nutritional boosts for women. I mean, for women and men, but she was there talking specifically to women. And the point was, if you get an IV drip, you can stay up later at night to keep working.
Yeah.
You can, you know, you do your all-nighter, you know, take this IV drip and you have more energy the next day. I'm like, that's fucking crazy. That's insane. And women's bodies are, you know, shutting down. They're dysregulating. And because of this predominant, and I say that because I know one of my clients, her kind of caught up in that cycle. I mean, she had, I think she had her ovaries removed in their late 20s, you know, and it's like, we've so prioritized productivity, getting things done, succeeding, you know, it's a masculine reward culture. So all of this authentic feminine being, this emotional embodied wisdom, we're denying it. We're suppressing it. We're not telling the truth about it. And then our relationships aren't working and we wonder why.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if somebody is out there and they're listening to this podcast, which is all about the art of authenticity, right? So there's some interest in finding that authentic truth and coming back to the deeper self. What do you think? Because I talk to a lot of people who are very similar to what you're saying, right? Their life is successful in a controlled achievement, yeah, right? Like check the boxes way, but they're stressed and they're holding all of this energy within mm-hmm. themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they want to break out and they want to have a life that's fulfilling. But to me, this myth that you just find what you love and it will happen is also so prevalent out there. Just tap into that passion and you'll find bliss.
Right.
Can you speak a little bit to like the path of authentic life and what that.
Yeah. Does that say it all? Yeah. That's my answer. You know, I mean, we were talking about this I before we started the podcast that, you know, I have no idea how I got where I am right now. I have no damn idea. I mean, I just followed my curiosity along the way. I'm 42 years old. I'm finally doing what I really love. And I mean, I've been doing what I really love for really ever since I got out of the military at 26 years old. I was committed. It's like, I knew at that age, I was so miserable in the military. I had money. I had prestige. I was a captain in the world's most powerful Air Force. I had a uniform. I had security. You know, I had everything that we're supposed to want. I had home. I had a good woman. I had it all. And I was absolutely miserable. I was dead inside. And I realized, like, when I got out, I was just committed to, like, you can't pay me enough to be miserable. Mm-hmm. That became my motto. You can't pay me enough to be miserable. And I lived from that place and still do. But following that path, like from that place of profound disconnection from my own heart's truth, you know, and that's what a lot of our culture does again. And then the military takes it to the extreme where we get caught up in the story of, well, how are you going to make money? How are you going to survive? How are you going to prosper? How are you going to afford the family and the mortgage and how are you going to pay your student loans and how are you going to, you know, all of that. So we still live in a system that rewards kind of the rational solution to things and denies what the heart is aching for. So, you know, by the time most of us get turned on to this idea of I'm tired of being miserable, of the rat race, of the life we're aching to lead, to live, and the one we're actually living, there's kind of a big gap mm-hmm. between those two. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the closure of that gap, it can be very chaotic. It can be very difficult. And my own journey was fraught with challenges and still is. I mean, again, I'm 42 and I would say things didn't really start coming together and financially and where just everything started lining up. I did a lot of great things that I loved over the years, but some of them made money. Most of them did not make anything. And mm-hmm. you know, and as I mean, I probably in the last 7-8 years, I've probably, you know, worked on 20 to 30 different entrepreneurial projects, most of which made almost no money. And so, and that's scary in this world.
Yeah. And what's so cool that I hear you saying, though, is that you said 26, you're in the military, and you had it all, right?
I mean, yeah.
The funny part of the conversation is that I am miserable and I had it all. And it's like, how do we even talk like this? Because if you had it all, you wouldn't be miserable, right? So we had it all in terms of this one definition. And so my question to you is, when you're struggling and you've got these entrepreneurial businesses going and several aren't working, but you're on this path towards something that's meaningful to you, would you trade it up to have been back at the I have it all moment?
Hell no. not even for half a second have I ever thought I should go back into that world of, well, the military was a really, really heavy experience. So that was pretty, that's never been a consideration, like to go back into that kind of thing. But I have along the way, even as late as a couple years ago, been tempted to just go get a damn job.
Right.
Have someone else pay me because it's so much easier.
Yeah.
I'll just show up. You tell me what to do and let me collect my paycheck every 2 weeks. Absolutely. That's been part of my inner dialogue over the years. I even went to this was probably 5 years ago or so. No, or maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where I knew I wasn't supposed to get a job. I was in between projects. I didn't quite know what to do at this point. I had been blogging, but that hadn't really taken off yet. And I was just like, all right, I know I could feel, talk about, you know, moment to moment truth. I knew in my heart, just be patient. You're not supposed to get a job. I had maybe, I don't remember, $5,000-$10,000 in the bank or so savings. You know, I'd had tens of thousands of dollars before that, but that I'd, you know, managing music artists ran out of. But I knew, I was like, I'm not supposed to go get a job. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Just be patient. But I was so uncomfortable in that, in that in between time, that I actually went to a temp agency. And I remember, it's kind of a funny story, because I remember, Laura, it was my whole body recoiled at the thought of even a temp job. But I went for it, but my fear drove me there. I put on a suit, I got my resume together, and you know, I have a master's degree. I'm a former Air Force captain and a white man. I'm about as employable as it gets. And I remember driving down to this temp agency praying they did not find me any work. And I went in, I put on a good show. But again, my whole body was just like, oh, I wanted to vomit. It felt terrible. And I left to put on a good show. They had some really amazing opportunities for someone who would have wanted those, which I didn't. But it was all smiles and yeah, great. You know, this looks great. Putting on the fake, you know, being inauthentic with myself.
Yeah.
And therefore them. And as I left the office, again, I said a prayer. Not intentionally. It's just like the dialogue in my head was, God, please don't ever call me. Don't ever call me. Don't ever call me. You know what? They never called me. And I was fine. I was fine. I didn't need that experience. I needed the experience of going to the temp agency and selling myself out, or at least, you know, having that inauthentic moment of contrast. But I was fine. And that's like the fears that we carry. Oh, I'm going to run out of money. I'm going to be homeless. It's like, it's insane. I realized I would only ever be homeless by choice. You know, I'm very fortunate in that I have family. I have, you know, there's so much support in the world that because of our masculine mindset, I got to do it by myself. I don't need any help. I'm an independent person. You know, I'm going to succeed on my own. Nobody's doing anything by themselves on planet Earth.
No.
We're all in one big conspiracy collaboration project together. And it's insane to think that I have to do it all by myself.
Well, and that's not possible. I mean, somebody, you know, dug some trenches so that water came into your house. So but your day starts with somebody else doing something for you.
Absolutely.
In bringing, electricity and water and things.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what I love, Brian, again, is this whole idea of like, trusting in that deeper self and recognizing when you're going against it, because, you know, mm-hmm. there's this calling for you in a certain direction. And, you know, it's great when that certain direction is CEO of a company that's venture backed and it sure. happens to pay, you know, yeah. like half a million yeah. a year. Like I interviewed somebody yeah. that's their position and that's great yeah. for them. Right. But it's, yeah. it doesn't, these external things don't buy fulfillment. And if this is your truth and you're not pursuing it, you say live your truth or sacrifice your joy, right? And I think
yes, that's right.
summarizes it really beautifully. So in this podcast, I ask everyone, you know, what does an authentic life mean? So could you tell our listeners, you know, what does that really mean for you?
Yeah, for me, it's just a moment by moment experience. Am I really being honest with myself first in this? I can't tell you the truth if I'm not telling myself the truth. If I'm lying to myself, if I'm saying that what's happening right now is okay when it's really not. Mm-hmm. And that could just be, maybe I'm having a conversation with someone who's talking to me in a certain way that doesn't feel good. Maybe they're using language that isn't kind, or like going to that temp agency. You know, and my everything about my being is saying, what the hell are you doing? Get out of here. This is not the way.
Yeah.
But I'm still doing it. I'm overriding that out of fear. And I can feel it because in fear, the body contracts, the body tightens, the body closes, right? So what story am I telling myself in this moment? And, you know, being in an intimate relationship is such a profound arena within which to do this exploration too, because you're with another human being so often and you get all these opportunities to check in with yourself and go, okay, is this really true for me right now to be whatever we're doing in this moment? Am I honoring my own boundaries? Am I honoring my own truth, my own wisdom? Am I ready for this thing that this person is where they're wanting to go and or what they're doing? Or yeah, I want to give you a good example, but it just, again, it comes down to, you know, my girlfriend's always asking me, she wants me to share my feelings. She wants me to say, you know, I want you to be honest with me. What do men love talking about? It ain't feelings. but we've got to learn. This is the masculine learning to relax his kind of codependent control freak nature and to allow the feminine her play in, because that's intimacy. You can't have a dynamic, intimate relationship without both masculine and feminine energies. That's why we do intimate relationship, to do that delicious exchange, that dance of energies. And if we're suppressing it, not telling the truth in this moment, and I get confronted with that a lot, because yes, things will come up, and you know, in my old paradigm view of, you know, experience of masculinity, it's like, nah, you know, I got this, I can handle this. Yeah. You want to do that thing that I don't want to do? Well, shit, I can do it. You know, I can do anything, whatever. And learning to relax that inauthentic mask and just tell the truth of my experience. You know, if we have a conversation that's hard for me, for maybe it's confronting in some way, having the capacity to just say, you know what, I feel really uncomfortable right now. This is really hard for me, rather than the inauthentic mask of just, well, you know, blah, 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 you know, and trying to out masculine her by, you know, having whatever insane idea. Gosh, I could just ramble forever right now. But
well, no, I actually like that you're getting into this, because I think people out there are thinking, well, wait a minute, you don't really say this, do you? I mean, do you actually say to the person, I'm uncomfortable right now? And I love that you said that, because I think what I heard you do is own your own experience instead of blaming, like, you just Absolutely. Made me feel uncomfortable, right?
That's right.
And I think Absolutely. The biggest part of telling your truth is that it's yours and it has nothing to do with the other person. So it doesn't have to become, because this is the number one thing that I hear is, but I don't want to have conflict, right?
Yeah.
And how can you have conflict if it's just your truth, right? And it's like, you know, and it's all about how you phrase it. But I think we're all taught to phrase things in a blaming, aggressive way.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, in the book, I have the four chapters in a row. Chapter 6, the truth does not manipulate. Chapter 7, the truth is never mean. Mm-hmm. Chapter 8, the profound kindness of truth. And chapter 9, your truth is only about you.
Yep.
And that's absolutely right. In a conversation, in an intimate relationship, emotions, what happens is especially, let's take anger, for example, right? Anger is often an authentic experience. But what happens is, because anger has always been the way that all of us have experienced anger, we've experienced it in a codependent world. And what I mean by that is, anger is always directed at you. Yeah. If a parent is angry, if your partner's angry, they're directing it at you because it's your fault.
Right.
And that is projected insanity. That is projected. That's saying that you have the power to completely fuck up my world and my emotions and my experience. And that is just stupid. That's not true. Anything, you know, short of punching you in the face, and even then you can, it might hurt you physically, but you can still feel about it however you want. Some people may think they deserve it and they're not angry. The point is, we don't have that much power over each other. And so most of us have experienced anger, though, in a very false, inauthentic, you know, it's your fault expression. Now, the healthy way to express anger in a relationship is to just own that I'm angry. It's not your fault. You're not a bad person. It's not about your character. Just something has happened, and I have all these emotions coming up. And I had a couples retreat back in February with six couples. And we had this experience where this man, I did a process with him and his wife. And during this process, he got really angry, so mm-hmm. much so. Now, he was a very timid man. I mean, he was the kind of man that would walk into a room and you almost don't even notice him. He just, he didn't really have a lot of presence. Mm-hmm. And he came to me, the anger didn't come out during this process. He came to me on a break and he said, "Brian, this has happened so many times." And his hands were shaking and he had so much energy. So much. He's like, I feel like I'm going to explode. And I said, "Okay, great. Let's, I brought him back to the group and I just had him. I said, "Okay, now energy in the body. That's all that's happening right now, is energy is stuck in the body. And what we're going to do is we're going to move it out of the body. We're just going to give it some expression and see what happens." So I had him throw a punch. And he threw up and everyone's witnessing this. He's not directing it at anyone. He's just in front of the group. It's like, had him throw a punch. Okay. I threw one punch into the air. And then before I could tell him to do it again, he went off, just wham, 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 just air punches, screaming, air punches. He ended up taking off his sweater and throwing it. Well, he it's funny because he took off his sweater and he was going to gently put it on the ground because that's his programming, is don't show anger. And I said, "Oh, hell no, pick that up and throw it across the room." And his name was Joel, and he just went off and, you know, for a good 45 seconds, just expressed all this anger, not directed at anyone. And let me tell you, the women in that group, no one said anything. We were just like in awe. And then one of the women spoke up and she said, "That was so hot." And all of a sudden he became sexy Joel. Like, he transformed. I mean, all of a sudden I had respect for him as a man, whereas before, it's not that I didn't have respect for him. It's just that he was just kind of invisible. And all of a sudden he showed up. Mm-hmm. He was present. It was profound.
Because owning your emotional states, right? There's nothing wrong with any emotion. Mm-mm. I feel like I say this on a daily basis, but it's just information. Something's happening, right? So what's going on with this guy that all this energy is stuck in his body? And it's an opportunity to grow and learn about yourself. But we're so afraid of anger, or we're so used to blaming it on other people. So it's a distraction, right? It's like, I'm angry at you, so now I'm not going to think about myself. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
totally. It's all projected. We're taking our own caca and throwing it on someone and saying, "Look, you have caca, and it's my damn caca that I'm pointing out."
Yeah.
And you know, in this case of like Joel, for example, we can move energy out of the body, express it in the moment by owning it. And absolutely, you know, with my girlfriend, you know, that this happened once where we had an uncomfortable conversation in which I was very triggered. I was confronted by it, and we got through it, and I was walking her to her car, and she said, "You know, are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." because you know, my military mind, my masculine mind is trained to not feel, to just look, everything's okay. We don't have any real problems here. No one's bleeding, right? You know, there's nothing's on fire. So yeah, it's all good. That's bullshit. I was triggered and I was hurt and I caught myself and I said, you know, actually, I am feeling a little funky right now. Like that conversation definitely got to me and I'm feeling a little funky, but you know, so, you know, it's there.
Yeah.
And she so appreciated that.
Yeah.
Like that was so, she felt connected to me then because I was just being honest about my feelings. I wasn't making it her fault. I wasn't blaming her for.
That's the key, right? Yeah. It's like you could have easily said, yeah, I'm feeling funky because you said that other thing and now I'm pissed, right? And I'm out of
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
Right? Like, and until you change that's those right. 10 things about yourself, I'm going to remain in this place, which kind of brings us full circle right. to how we were raised, uh-huh. right? That I'm going to take uh-huh. myself away yeah. until you become the person I need you to be so that I can be happy.
Yeah. That's right.
So let me ask you this, the final question that we go through with everybody. Do you mm-hmm. have practices that help you stay connected to this authentic part of your life? Like, do you, you know, some people meditate, they go on walks. Like, do you have anything on a really practical level? Or is it just, I mean, you're somebody who's really like writing and living this every day. So maybe it's not like that for you, but do you have anything to share?
Well, I'll share with you. I mean, this exploration has been such a part of my life for so many years, and it's an evolution. I mean, I still have my blind spots. It's why I still will work with coaches and my partner, she can still call me out on things because I don't see it. But one of my clients is really waking up to this right now, and I'll use her experience because the contrast I think is better. And it really speaks to my practice also, though, is she's starting to notice the difference. Like I take it as a meditative practice. It's a becoming aware of your thinking. What am I thinking? And you can do this standing in line at Starbucks or driving to work. Just start to notice, well, what are the thoughts that I'm having? What am I thinking? Start to notice them. Oh, I'm thinking this thing. Oh, look at that story going on there that this person is XYZ. Isn't that interesting? That's a story I'm telling myself. It might be true. It might not. I don't know. But start getting distance. It's like stepping back and witnessing all of the thoughts that are going on in our heads. And you start to see what we're all aching to experience. We've talked about codependence, then independence. What we're all aching to experience is interdependence. And interdependence is that place where where I can tell my girlfriend, for example, I so want this experience with you. I want to do this thing. I want to take this trip with you or whatever it is. I want you to be, I would love for you to do more of this or do more of that. And it's you're completely free to not do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to love you anyway. I'm going to love you anyway. Mm. Right?
Love
That's the practice of interdependence. It's the same thing of saying, I have all this anger, I have all this energy in my body, and oh my God, I'm so brah. And it's not your fault.
Right.
And I'm not going to point it at you. I'm not going to take it out on you. I'm not going to, you know, that's interdependence. That's like, I'm free to be me, to want what I want, to feel what I feel, to express what is coming through me. And I'm not going to hurt you with it. I'm not going to blame you for it. I'm not going to hold you responsible. You're complete, like you are, you know, and we're going to dance together. I mean, that's interdependence. And so, you know, for example, with this one client I'm working with where she's really waking up and watching her behaviors and her thoughts, she's starting to get really clear about where am I taking an action? Like she just started dating a new man and she can see her old codependent behavior. Like if he doesn't text for a few hours,
yeah.
She'll send him a little thing just to get his attention. That's old, you know, that's old codependent behavior. Like, uh-oh, I'm afraid I'm losing him. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to do something nice for him so that he remembers me.
Yeah. I only laugh because it's like, I think everybody will say there's been that text moment. Like I texted him.
Yeah. It's hilarious. So start to notice that. Like it's a practice. For me, the most powerful practice throughout my life has been just noticing.
Yeah.
Noticing the thoughts, noticing what's driving me to do this. Am I taking this action because I need something from them? I have to? Is it a have to or a need story? that's codependence, whether it's you're codependent on another person, whether you're codependent on your bank account, whether you're codependent on, you know, your parents' approval, whatever it is, notice that. And then the difference is an authentic expression of your heart, in my experience, is simply, okay, I wanna like take that example again. I'm gonna text this man because just the love in my heart wants to reach out and just offer this little gift of presence, of love, or whatever. And if he doesn't text back, we all have codependent, and we all have, it's all in us. We're all a big ball of mess in all of us. So I want to acknowledge that it's all present. But notice there is that aspect of you that can give the gift of your love and doesn't need anything in return for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you can find that space in yourself, which it's hard to maintain, and I slip all the time, it can be so powerful. Thank you, Brian, so much for coming on and sharing, I think, endless great pearls of insight and wisdom into people's lives. If they want to read your book, find out more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, on my website, Brian Reeves, B-R-Y-A-N, Reeves, R-E-E-V-E-S.com. That's, you can find my book through there. The book is on Amazon. You can get it in paperback. I recommend the paperback because it feels, the cover's beautiful. It's a piece of art. It feels so like butter. It's beautiful. but it's on Kindle also, paperback. But yeah, my website, I have all my blogs. And also I'm very active on Facebook, Brian Reeves Official, if you want to find me there also. And I have all kinds of goodies, and I'm doing a monthly group coaching program called Love Magic Coaching to explore this stuff deeper, and I have an online program, but it's all, you know, on my website. So awesome. Laura, this has been great. I've really enjoyed talking with you. Congratulations on persevering on your own journey. I know it's not easy.
Thank you. And thank you for being such a big part of starting me in the right direction. And thanks for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Laura.